Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome back to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into Jamie 6. I can't believe we've been with him for 6 whole chapters. The Storm of Swords. Matt, how are you doing, dude?
Hey, man. Wow. You know, it feels like it's been a whirlwind this week. I know it's been a whirlwind for you, Jimmy.
Yeah,
you got a lot of stuff going on in your work and, you know, that tech space, all kinds of companies getting bought out, people getting shuffled around,
laid off, you know, all the words you don't want to hear in media.
Jimmy might be homeless in a week. We'll have to see. I mean, then you just become a hedge knight, literally. You'll have to be podcasting from the hedges of the park bench.
Vagabond, yeah. I will just cruise around America with a sword and people will be like, who's that weird guy? And I'll be like, it's fine. Do you need any JavaScript done?
Yeah. Wow, man, this year, I don't know. Is 2025 going to be better or worse than 2024?
I'm ever the optimist. However, this year has started off on a pretty bad foot for me.
Yeah, well, you know, I will say this. For me, you know, sometimes, you know, in A Song of Ice and Fire, you have the old gods, you have the new gods, right? Well, yeah. one of the powers I believe in, Jimmy, is the sports gods, okay? And they giveth and they taketh away, okay? And it feels like every year, it's like, ah, man, sometimes my Steelers, you know, I just wanted to win this game, it'd be great, doesn't happen, or you have big blowouts, whatever. But I feel like it always kind of, it'll circle around and, you know, I'll get it in some other fashion. Well, this year, it seems like it's coming to fruition. I just want to state this, you know, on this show before it takes place. But go Bucks. Let's defeat Notre Dame in the national championship. And I will be the most obnoxious person ever.
I believe that. I believe that.
I will be 1,000% obnoxious about it. You know, I mean, Notre Dame, come on.
Fighting Irish.
Yeah.
I do like Irish people quite a bit.
Yeah. I mean, they had to beat Penn State. Like, we crushed Penn State, okay? Also, what a weird bowl game. Penn State, Notre Dame, that's like the Hide the Children Bowl. I mean, oh my God.
Oh, my God.
Jeez. So, anyway... With that, let's get into today's chapter. All right. So today's chapter here, Jamie 6 of A Storm of Swords. Roos Bolton has left Harrenhal to the goat, but before marching to the twins, he told Jamie to give his warm regards to his father. Jamie responds, so long as you give mine to Robb Stark. Jamie is now traveling for King's Landing under the protection of Steel Shanks Walton and a host of Dreadfort men. Qyburn tells him that Lord Selwyn has promised Vargo Hoat 300 gold dragons for the safe return of his daughter, but the goat warns him more as he still believes there are sapphires in Evenfall Hall. One night, Jamie has a bizarre fever dream that he and Brienne are trapped in the dark caverns beneath Casterly Rock. He sees the shades of other knights of the Kingsguard, as well as Prince Rhaegar, come to judge him for killing Aerys. After the fire of his sword goes out, Brienne's continues to burn, defending him from the shades. When Jaime awakens, he commands Walton to return to Harrenhal, saying that he forgot something. Back at Harrenhal, the goat's men open the gates, and Jaime finds that Brienne has been tossed into the bear pit with only a tourney sword. Vargo Hoat, with a bandage around his face from where Brienne bit off his ear, will not pull the woman up. Jaime jumps into the pit to save Brienne and holds off the bear long enough for Walton's men to fill it with quarrels. The mummers are unable to stop them because Steelshank's escort of 200 men outnumber them 2-1. Vargo asks Jaime to tell his father that he had been merciful, and the Kingslayer promises that the goat will receive his ransom. When Brienne asks him why he came back, Jaime responds that he had dreamed of her.
We once again see dreams motivating and moving pieces in A Song of Ice and Fire. And in this instance, we're pretty happy about that, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So this chapter has a couple pretty cool little interesting things. And I mean, I think the first thing that's going to appear in everyone's mind is this is the chapter that says Red Wedding's coming.
Oh, it's signed and sealed. Yeah. I mean, we kind of knew, but like, it's a super done deal.
I think even as a first time reader, you'd have to be like, something bad's really about to happen. Like, mm-hmm. Why is Roose Bolton? We've seen this, and I think this should actually serve. Let me see how I want to say this. This is actually something in doing the reread and thinking more about it, you know, because I think, again, the majority of a lot of our audience are people who are first time show watchers. And the difference of Roose Bolton in Harrenhal as opposed to Tywin Lannister is a much bigger deal than I always forget about how much bigger of a deal it is in the books than it is in the show.
And you can see why he chose this, right? Like, you can actually see why.
Yeah, because now you, like, the seeds of the Red Wedding taking place and everything are so much more prevalent. It was a cool dynamic in the show of it being Arya and Tywin, and they go much more into it, right? Where he's asking her, like, a lot of that stuff isn't even in there, right? Where he's asking her, like, oh, she knows this person and this person and this person.
Yeah.
In the books, it's more like, well, she just is his cupbearer and he doesn't recognize her, and that's really it.
Yeah, you know, because that happens all the time in Westeros. Like, people don't even know what King Robert looks like. There's someone that goes up to Ned when he's on the throne and is like, King Robert. And he's like, I'm Ned.
Yeah, so that does cause me to think about why that decision was made to have it be Tywin instead of Roose Bolton. I mean, it comes across as cool. Yeah, pretty much.
That's why.
It is cool, but it's a really different way to do it. Like, especially now when you're seeing a lot more of the importance of Roose Bolton's character under the scenes and everything, and the setup for the Red Wedding and just how involved he was with that. I mean, he was clearly planning that almost from the beginning. So clearly, you could tell he's like, the minute I can betray the Starks, I'm going to.
Yeah, we get the sense that they're kind of dissenters among the North and one of the more powerful families that, I mean, you just don't get Stark vibes from them. You know, the Manderleys, the Karstarks, like, they feel Stark adjacent. And then you have the Boltons, where it's like the weird, like, hermit people that are like really into some weird stuff. You know, it's like neighbors up in the holler. You're like, they're in their neighborhood, but like, they don't really do the same type of things. That's a Appalachian term for those wondering. But I don't know. I like both, by the way. Yeah. I know it's always easy to go, oh, I love the Tywin stuff way more. It's a better change. But like you said, you can see why Roose was put here. And we can't discount the fact that Charles Dance was absolutely amazing and commanding on screen for 2 seasons before they decided to make this change. Like, they had seen evidence that Charles Dance probably was more of a draw than the gentleman playing Roose Bolton, who I can't remember his name, who is great, by the way. He's actually a pretty great actor. I've seen him in other stuff since.
He's in Wheel of Time.
Yeah, he's in Wheel of Time. Yeah. Yeah. And he's been in a couple other things I've seen. I think he was in a BBC show I watched. I can't really remember. But the truth of the matter is that Tywin Lannister and Charles Dance's presence is just way more impactful than Roose Bolton in the show. And not to mention that maybe arguably one of the biggest moments, if not the biggest moment in the TV show, is, you know, when Tyrion spears Charles Dance through his bowels while he's shitting. Like, that's pretty big. And seeing more and more of him on screen and the way that he interacts is important to build to that moment. Not to mention, I mean, honestly, we like Tywin when he interacts with Arya for the most part in Harrenhal, which is kind of building that conflict, like, maybe Tywin has a good side, right?
Right. It's really, it in a way, it actually helps build up the Tyrion thing more.
Than that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's just an interesting way to kind of do it, as opposed to in the books here, where it really sets up Bruce Bolton more. And it's one of the big arguments about the Stannis might lose.
Yeah.
Is Ramsay, because, you know, in the show, Ramsay kills Bruce Bolton. And a lot of people think that's not going to happen in the books. Like,
I mean,
Ramsay Bolton or Ramsay Snow isn't as, and so the whole situation is very interesting.
Yeah,
it also gets me to wonder, and this is like total tinfoil here, and maybe something we should look at later. But you know, there is the big, like, is Bruce Bolton like a vampire type theory, right? You know,
we've
talked about that before, and it's one of those things where people laugh at it because they're like, oh, you know, whatever. But their sigil is, they flay people. They literally cut people's skin off, and perhaps wear it is the argument, you know, that he would wear it to sort of rejuvenate himself or something. But Arya Stark becomes a faceless man, right? Who they also wear the faces of people, and there's some sort of magic into it. So there is a connection there.
Okay.
And is it like Arya is learning this skill, like the faceless man skill, while she's serving as the cupbearer for Roose Bolton, who also flays people?
Is that a connection? Right.
Right.
I mean,
is Roose Bolton maybe going to be Arya's final boss?
Could you imagine? That would be wild. That would be so much different than anything. It's on the table. I mean, at least as an option. I've read Fever Dream by George R. Martin. It's my favorite vampire novel of all time. And it is eerie. The description of vampires in that book, I went and looked, very similar to how Roose Bolton is described in A Song of Ice and Fire. It's not a one for one, but it's like 80 to 90% of the same descriptions for Roose. And I'm like, is he leading us to believe this? I mean, obviously George likes playing with like perception and reality and history and all these things. So like, he's probably just wanting us to wonder about it, but not actually like full sail believe that he's going to start like feeding on the humans in front of us, right? And being like, I am a vampire, ha. Huh?
Yeah.
I like to think of him as almost like that billionaire dude that doesn't never wants to die. What's his name? Yeah. It's like Brian Johnson.
The guy who has like 18 air purifiers in his
bedroom. Yeah, like that's Roose Bolton to me. Like Roose Bolton is, you know, for people who don't know, this is basically a guy, I don't know if he's a millionaire, billionaire, whatever. His name's Brian Johnson. There's a documentary about Netflix, not very good, but he's essentially trying to live forever and like de-age. And he's come up with like this whole stratagem. So like, if you were to ever become a billionaire, want to waste all the time you have to not dying, which makes you wonder if you're spending all your time trying not to die, are you really living? You know, maybe that's a conversation we should have. But this guy's insane. And
yeah, he's 47. He does look, I mean, he looks a little bit younger than 47, but there's also people.
Does he though?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, he gets plasma transfusions with his son, like often, all this stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, some of this stuff might have benefits, but like this dude's like trying to make the perfect cocktail so that he can live forever.
Yeah, he takes 91 pills a day.
I mean, why not? Why not? If you got that kind of, maybe that's just what he's focusing on. I don't know. But regardless, this is what I think of Roose Bolton. Like in my head canon, like Roose Bolton's this guy. And this guy looks like a vampire, by the way.
He does.
He looks like a vampire. And he also has a son who seemed very kind. But hey, you know, so does Roose Bolton. So that's my one for one. I think George is clairvoyant and was predicting the future.
Yeah. Okay. There is something I want to talk about specifically in this chapter, because this chapter actually provides us one of the coolest and one of my most favorite kind of small theories, and that is the Lothian Shield. Ezra and I actually back in the day did a massive Patreon episode about it. It's still up on Patreon. So if you want to join and check that out, or if you are a Patreon member, you can certainly go back and find that. But it's pretty early in the chapter here. And the shield is something that it comes up from time to time again. And it has a very kind of little, like you have to follow these certain threads along the books to kind of pay attention to it. And a lot of people think it might be the shield actually of the, the Tourney at Harrenhal Knight. What's his name?
The Knight of Laughing
Tree. Laughing Tree. Because it talks about it's been painted over and things like that.
Oh.
Yeah. So Lord Bolton had I don't know what that word is. Accoutred him? A-C-C-O-U-T-R-E-D. I don't know.
Accosted?
No, it's not, there's no S in it. I don't know. Preferring to ignore the missing hand that made such warlike garb a travesty, Jaime rode with sword and dagger on his belt. Shield and helm hung from his saddle. Chainmail under a dark brown surcoat. He was not such a fool as to show the Lion of Lannister on his arms, though, nor the plain white blazon that was his right as sword, as a sworn brother of the Kingsguard. He found an old shield in the armory, battered and splintered, the chipped paint still showing most of the great black bat of House Lothston upon a field of silver and gold. The Lothstons held Harrenhal before the Wents and had been a powerful family in that day, but they had died out ages ago, so no one was likely to object to him bearing their arms. He was no one's cousin, no one's enemy, no one's sword, in sum, no one.
And there is no one.
Yeah. Actually, I think we actually we may even have that episode up on YouTube. But let me, I'm gonna pull
I'll be honest with you. This is the first time I've ever heard of this.
The Lost and Shield?
I have actually, you know, I'm willing to admit it. I'm no expert. This is the first time I've ever heard of this, Matt.
Wow. Well, maybe.
And I feel like I've listened to literally everything you and Ez have ever done. So maybe I did hear it and it just went out one ear and out the other. Like, but this is like all new to me right now.
Oh no, no, I, for whatever reason, it's not popping up, maybe because I'm spelling it wrong. Oh.
See, this is what happens when you do only audiobooks, Matt. You don't have to spell anything.
No, I it would actually help if I knew.
Did you know audiobooks aren't reading?
They are. It would help if I could actually type. That would be.
We get comments from time to time telling Matt that he does not read. It's pretty funny, actually.
And I can't find it. Anyway, I'll try to pull it up here as we continue on. But yeah, it's a very cool because it's the whole deal is so mysterious. And some people think that the shield was painted over with something quickly to kind of hide the identity. Or there are some people that think that this shield could be, you know, it seems like because the Lothstons went out so much long, so long ago that there wouldn't be a shield, even if it's an old one, that would actually still have this painting and sigil on it and stuff like that. Some people think it might be Duncan the Tall's, like it was painted over. There's a lot to it that's actually really cool, and I'll try to get it pulled up here.
Yeah, it does seem like a lot of description for a know nothing shield that you say comes up multiple times. This sounds like the most George thing of all time.
Yeah, let me see here. But yeah, so some other things in the chapter, and then we'll come back to that. So obviously this is a, you know, it's a Jaime chapter, and you know, with him a big deal is he has this dream of Casterly Rock. What do you think of that, Jaime?
Well, it's like, man, is he getting it mixed up? Like, because the big thing is that it's like underneath Casterly Rock, right beneath it in the dark caverns. And I'm wondering, is this possibly, because I don't believe the final battle happens at Winterfell. We've talked about this at length, so I won't go into it, but I believe that it happened at Winterfell for simply budget reasons in the show. I think that the final fight with the others actually happens at King's Landing. I think that that's like, it's integral to like the ignorance that people are showing towards this existential threat is that it comes to your hometown, right? Like that's the idea. Like, so anyways, but with that said, I'm like, man, how does he know that it's definitely Casterly Rock's caverns? Like, is this maybe the crypts of Winterfell that we're seeing and he's misinterpreting it? And the reason why I go with the not trusting Jaime's mind is because, one, it's a dream. And in dreams, we constantly get things wrong. But two, we also know that visions and dreams in George's works generally have a little bit of a twist on them or are being misinterpreted in some way. So I kind of wonder about the beneath Casterly Rock pieces. But then he sees the shades of other knights of the Kingsguard, as well as Prince Rhaegar, come to judge him for killing Aerys. I mean, this seems like very much, you know, him dealing with grief and then the stress of it. I don't know if I want to say PTSD necessarily, but this is him dealing with the choices that he has made and how it haunts him. I think subconsciously, Jaime is a very conflicted individual that just happens to pretend like he's only a meathead that just wants to, I mean, quite frankly, just have sex with his sister. That's not who Jaime actually is. I think that he's kind of closed himself off to a lot of the other emotions that he's supposed to be feeling, and it's coming out in his dream. So I think this one's a little bit more of a psychoanalysis, psychological dream, but it's interesting to think about because, you know, we know Tyrion has dragon dreams about Casterly Rock. Now we have Jaime having Casterly Rock, and maybe it's just because that's where they grew up. But it does feel like there's going to be some monumental scenes in Casterly Rock in the later books to me, if we were to get them. I think Casterly Rock is a location we will be at. The big things will happen. I believe Cersei kind of flees there after Griff takes the throne. That's my guess. So this is all very, very interesting, but it doesn't have the exact same feel as his dream where he's like slaying people with wildfire. And like, it's like basically it's the whites and the others that it seems to be, which is a huge dream. And we can delve into what that right. means when we get there.
That's one of the reasons I think it's possible. You look at this, you look at some of the other things, the argument that Jaime will be Azor Ahai. Because
dream is pretty on the nose. Right.
I still very much love the idea that Azor Ahai and the Prince That Were Promised are two different things, and that Azor Ahai mm-hmm. will just be some random, like not, you know, not basically not random, but like not John or Danny.
Yeah.
And like, is that it? Like, that's why I love the idea that it could be the Hound, as it, because it would just be such a cool thing for the Hound to be this person who is so afraid of fire and then is the one who ends up saving mm-hmm. you know, the day. Because you can. Like the person who takes out the Night King.
Yeah, sure thing. Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It doesn't necessarily have to be if there even is a Night King in the books, right? Which there may not be, but you know, I love the idea that it could be a piece of the story. Whereas like the John, Danny saving Westeros, uniting everyone to defeat this army is the bigger thing, which is actually what did kind of happen in the show with John, is that yeah. John was still the one to gather the troops. He's the one that brought the wildling army in. He's the one that connects with Daenerys and says, I need your help. And you get the Dothraki army and the Unsullied. And then they're the ones who ultimately defeat the Night King and the White Walkers. And you could even argue that Jon was such an important part of that because he's the one that gives Arya Needle, which sends her on this path of becoming an assassin and becoming, you know, somebody who would be skilled enough to even do it. Did it end up being the way we wanted to in the show? No, but it could still be something like that in the books, where Jon may not be the one to maybe go one-on-one sword fight. I think they should have done that in the show, right? Because they teased it so much that it seemed like that's the way the story in the show could have gone. In the books, the story could play out different, right? Like a lot of people love the idea of Jaime being the one to potentially take out a Night King because he is the Kingslayer. And oh, it has this cool double meaning where he is the one who, you know, it sort of redeems the name Kingslayer as opposed to it being something that is negative.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting. You're kind of using John as this like very central figure connecting people together, because one of the things that we talked about and you've talked about is how Bran thinks about John constantly. And we know that Bran is certainly going to have things to do or be part of the reason why some of this stuff takes place. So, yeah.
Well, and I also like the idea too of it, because even if John is the person who doesn't necessarily go one-on-one with say a Euron or a Night King, and John is the one who brings everyone together to sort of say to save the realm. Well, that actually is a cool narrative with his father Rhaegar, right? Because that's what Rhaegar tried to do. Rhaegar tried to bring everyone together at this council, and mm-hmm. Rhaegar tried to say, I want to set things right when we come back from, you know, even when he, you know, told Jaime, he said, hey, there's a lot of things I want to fix when I get back from this battle. And that's what he tried to do. He tried to actually do it diplomatically and peacefully, and it didn't work out for him. But so if John were to actually sort of, you know, if John were to do that, were to act to bring everyone together in a diplomatic sense to do it, that would be kind of a cool thing. And the show kind of went in that way. They did, the show didn't dive deep enough into Rhaegar's backstory and stuff like that on the show to have that connection work, although it did kind of, you know, it did kind of happen that way.
Yeah, and you bring up a really good point about like one of the more fundamental aspects of A Song of Ice and Fire is that a lot of what's going on is kind of critiquing the system that is in place. Like this, you know, monarchy feudal system is clearly not great. It's not working. And I do think that the end points of A Song of Ice and Fire most likely would point to the system being a bit overthrown. I think that that's probably pieces of it. And maybe Rhaegar was the initial spark in a revolution that was snuffed out and didn't work out, right? Like maybe that's true. And that's the truth in history. You know, I know you're a history guy. Sometimes revolutions happen at the wrong time and they don't succeed, but they then present an opportunity for people to be inspired or to learn from, and then, you know, eventually achieve the revolution at the right point in history. And maybe Jon Snow is the right point in history.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when you look at when you look at this dream Jamie's having too, you know, this is where like the Azor Ahai argument for Jaime gets made, where he's got a sword that's on fire and he's down in these pits with Brienne. Tell me, Jaime, what lives here? What lives beyond the darkness? Doom. No bear, he knew, no lion, only doom. Right. And in the show, we see Jaime and Cersei die underneath King's Landings, or you could argue in tunnels, but maybe it is going to happen at Casterly Rock, where this whole thing takes place, and maybe Brienne is the one who saves him as opposed to that. And his sword is on fire and it's perhaps going out. So if Jaime is the person who perhaps becomes Azor Ahai, instead of a Jon Snow with a flaming sword, like we think, I think it's still a cool way to do it while also having John be the central person to bring everyone together. And I don't think John not being the one to take, we don't even know what the final villain's going to look like yet. I mean, but I do think I do think it's possible for somebody else to be that like Azor Ahai character. We also know that the way it's told in the histories is it's possible it's three different people.
Could be three different people, but also, Matt, I mean, I don't think it's a very realistic expectation that George would go, and then there was Azor Ahai and everyone clapped. Like, I don't think that's how it worked.
Right.
There's a good chance we're going to be able to interpret who is Azor Ahai at the end of the series, and we'll have arguments about it. Like,
right.
That's a very George thing to do, right? Like, not kind of leave it up to us to figure out. Am I misremembering? Is there another dream sequence with Jaime with the flaming sword? I feel like I remember there being two. Am I misremembering?
I do believe there is another one where he thinks he's fighting an army of ice. Okay, John also has dreams of fighting an army of ice. Daenerys has a dream of fighting an army of ice, and Bran like sees, it's kind of, I don't know if it's exactly if it's an army of ice that Bran sees. I think sometimes it's described as black. I'd have to go back and look at the exact wording of it, but a lot of it stems from Bran 3 in A Game of Thrones, where he's flying over and seeing everything in that first big dream. There's so many different moments and things in there. But yeah, so a lot of people do. And I think that's more George's way of saying these people are going to be around for whatever this final battle is. Now, most of that, honestly, it feels like it's taking place at the Trident. Not all of it is, but a lot of it seems like that's where a lot of this stuff is going to go down. By the way, I did get the big, huge thing pulled up here. And it's like a pretty massive theory. It's from Cantus, who's like somebody who's done, he's pretty well known in massive theories. They're all amazing. And anyway, so about that Lost and Shield, his argument is that it's Howland Reed's, and it is the Night of the Laughing Trees.
I love it.
And some of that comes to, we don't have time to go into all of it today. And again, as and I did one back in the day, I believe it is on our YouTube. I think if you search on YouTube, I think like not that many people have actually ever talked about it. And so like, I think our like YouTube icon pops right up, but Jimmy, we should do a dedicated episode on this.
I'm so
down. I'd love to go back into it. So if you look at it, so I already talked up the thing about it, where it says no one's enemy, no one's sworn sword, and some no one. So then I'm reading from the website here, from this person's argument, as with that, As with the Shield of the Night of the Laughing Tree, I would like to take a moment to highlight some important findings regarding the Lofton Shield. Unlike the Mystery Knight Shield, the significance of the Lofton Shield is uncertain, clearly from Jamie's expert above and others from Brienne's chapters in A Feast for Crows, because Brienne gets this shield. And then she is carrying the shield too. We know that the shield is associated with an extinct house long rumored to dabble with dark evil forces. Other than that, the shield seems completely innocuous. Despite the possible lack of significance, the shield has, however, been quite prominent in the text. We have a fairly detailed accounting of the shield's description. Additionally, we have very detailed knowledge of the shield's movements, first from Harrenhal to King's Landing, the possession of Jaime, then throughout the Riverlands, and then the possession of Brienne. We further have detailed account of how Brienne eventually has the shield repainted. Thus, readers are left with the knowledge that while the shield may look different, it is in truth the shield from Harrenhal, meaning that she now has this shield that could potentially be the one of the Night of Laughing Tree. And this, to me, is the biggest argument for it, is that the damage that we know that the shield is damaged. If the shield, and so the argument he makes is, if the shield was used during an era where the Lothstans occupied Harrenhal, why was the shield allowed to fall in such a state of disarray? Surely such a damaged shield wouldn't have been disposed of or repaired by the Lothstans. At the very least, one would figure that the heraldry would have been repainted. Marching to battle or attorneys with an unrecognizable heraldry and battered shields would undermine the elevated status of being one of the greater houses in the Riverlands. According to the Song of Ice and Fire wiki, House Lofton died out sometime after 212. And where we're at now is about 299-300. That means almost 90 years in which the shield is just sitting there and could have been repainted. How did such a shield linger in such a great castle for at least 90 years without being repainted or repurposed, especially if it was lingering in an armory for that entire time? Even more so, since the shield was associated with a house with a dark history, this leads to care. I'm reading for like a massive thing here. So he's kind of talking about this and this and this and all these different points. But it is a very big deal. And he goes, I mean, it's a massive thing. I mean, I think the episode as I did was like, it was like an hour long and it was mostly just me reading it. and so it's really big, but it's a very, very, very cool. It's a very, very cool theory. And it is something that George has clearly made important, that Brienne picks up this relic and then she gets repainted. And that's the shield she's carrying. And it's also similar that Dunk the Tall gets Sir Arlen Pennytree's shield repainted. And Brienne has that same thing. So it's like, even if these shields have different significance to them, Dunk's and Brienne's, they both go on the similar path. And it's like, well, Dunk gets Sir Arlen, and we don't know the adventures that Sir Arlen and Pennytree went on. We know like a couple here and there from, you know, our brief little thing. We know he rode what's his name from the, you know, he's telling the story. So in the Hedge Knight, so he can get in, and what's his name? The Darian remembers him, right? Oh yeah. Sarlin served with you. And so it's just kind of a similar thing. And this is where this origin starts. It's a really cool thread to keep as you're going through the books.
I think it could be a part of like a bigger effort, maybe episode that we could do. And it'd be, what's up with Howland Reed? I think that yeah. might be just a great episode that we would need to schedule out some time for, because it would be a massive undertaking.
Absolutely. And so really his ultimate argument about this is that Howland Reed essentially has the shield repainted after the thing is over, because remember, the Mad King has gone crazy about this Knight of the Laughing Tree, and he wants to hunt it down, he wants to kill him, which then you can tie into this other argument, which we another big thing about like the true origins of Harrenhal. I did like a massive four-part Patreon thing, and I still want to go back in that with you, Jimmy, at some point. And like that might be the reason he goes and he thinks Lyanna Stark is the Knight of the Laughing Tree, which a lot of people do, and so that's why he's like, I'm gonna go get her, and that's what kicks off the whole deal. Right, yeah. Rhaegar has to go save her, and it's not this as detailed as we think. So, but yeah, all that stuff can tie to this one shield and tie back, and that essentially maybe Howland Reed has this shield repainted because he has this Knight of the Laughing Tree on it, which the Mad King thought was laughing at him. And so maybe he gets repainted to try and hide the evidence. Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's a pretty interesting theory.
I love it, dude. I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
It's little things like this that, like, you're not going to get in a TV show, you know, unless if it's super knows. Like, this is why I love reading, honestly, George's work. He just sends us down these rabbit holes that are so fun to dive into.
Yeah. Okay, let's pull up. I'll pull up the reread Reddit here to see what some of these other people are saying about it. Do you have anything else specifically about this chapter?
No, it's just I think this is like the pure turnaround. You know, we said it's the signed, sealed, and delivery of the Red Wedding in many ways, but it's also very much signed, sealed, delivery of like the complex nature of Jaime's redemption arc, because yes,
right,
he saves Brienne, but he also says, "Give my regards to Robb Stark," and then we of course know that he does. Jaime Lannister sends his regards in the Red Wedding. And it's just like, in this chapter, Jaime's the hero, but we also, if reading first time, right, like, we don't know what's about to happen to Robb Stark, even though we should. He's still being a bastard. You know what I mean? Jaime's still being a bastard in this chapter, even though he's saving Brienne. He's essentially mocking Robb Stark, knowing he's going to die. It's pretty, that's pretty intense.
Yeah. So let me pull this up here. So this is from the reread subreddit. I'm seeing. I love to look at this. I always bring it up every time, just because I love to see what people are thinking before, like, the show really took off.
Yeah. Sure.
Says Jamie's dream reads like his subconscious. Everything he has known deep down has come right back at him, and it's time to face his issues. But most of all, it was his father's voice. And besides Lord Tywin, stood his sister, pale and beautiful, a torch burning in her hand. Joffrey was there as well. Jaime is looking at the three evilest people in his family. I've read a lot of theories about this and imagine foretelling the deaths of the three of them, but do not agree with them. Jaime, which is actually interesting, you know, because
I mean, two of them do die.
Two of them will die relatively shortly. Jaime, sleeping with his head against the weirwood stump, has allowed the inner conflicts he has to flood into his waking mind via the dream. Now, what's interesting about that is that now, thanks to House of the Dragon, perhaps, we have a different take on sleeping in weirwood
beds.
Right, right. Because and isn't it also at Harrenhal?
Yeah, yeah. I like that a lot.
Could that be
I mean, obviously the canons are different, but like that, I mean,
maybe.
Well, no, they are. I mean, George has said it, but like that makes us think differently about this scene, because there's clearly something going on with werewoods. Like Jaime had this dream. So basically, remember how we were saying, like, why does Tyrion have dragon dreams? Why does Jaime have dreams? Well, Jaime's dream might very much been caused by a werewood.
Yeah.
I wonder how close a proximity Tyrion is within like werewoods whenever he has his dreams.
His dragon dreams.
Does he have a dream when he's at the wall? I can't remember. I'd have to look. But now I want to go see like what's the precursor in the aftermath of all these dreams that these people have that we don't expect.
Yeah. Where does it? I want to see exactly where it says that he's sleeping in a werewood.
Yeah. Also, I was going to ask, is that I can't remember if
it's before his dream or after, but either way, I don't have it highlighted. Unfortunately, I'll have to go back and dive into that, but it's sleeping with his head against the weirwood stump. Yeah. And so, because now, you know, you can tie into this. So these are people talking about this 9 years ago. There are theories that because sleeping with his head on the weirwood tree, the old god sent the dream to Jaime subconsciously, or that he's connected to the weirwood net or something like that, which causes the dream. And this leaks to a Reddit though about the Grand Weirwood. Ah, this is what I love about this is so good. I gotta save this. Let me see. The Grand Weirwood conspiracy. The terrible secret of the trees. No, said Bran. No, don't. But they could not hear him, no more than his father had. The woman grabbed the captive by the hair, hooked the sickle around his throat, and slashed. And through the mist of centuries, the broken boy could not only watch the man's feet drummed against the earth, but he, Bran and Stark, could taste the blood. Wow. So good. Yep. See, that's how it goes. It just ties you into this weirwood conspiracy, because this is 10 years ago. These people. So these are all theories before even House of the Dragon, which now maybe it is. Maybe they are confirming some of that stuff. Because I know you can say
2015. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So Danis was out at this point in a couple episodes of, or a couple seasons of the show.
Yeah. So now you look at that and you might say, well, maybe there is a connection between the weirwoods and sleeping and the old gods.
It could be. Also, blood is in that vision with Bran. We know blood matters.
And Blood Raven could be. If you're touching a weirwood, is it easier for him to connect to people? So, I mean, that begs a question, too. It, can somebody who is not a green seer or somebody, can somebody be influenced by the weirwood network? Right.
Yeah.
If you are. Yeah.
I mean, there's clear evidence that the weirwoods are very special. And on top of that, the blood's very special. So anytime those two things are in a scene, we can kind of assume that that's the fantasy of A Song of Ice and Fire, right? Like those are the fantastical elements. That's certainly the show, the Game of Thrones abandoned, right? From like season six on,
100%.
They kind of wanted to get away from it. But in the books, we can expect a whole lot more of the magical elements, I would say.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. All right. Well, I think that's about it for us for the chapter today. What are we into next week? Did I get it pulled up? Oh, yeah. Big one. Catelyn 5 next week. Things are about to get real serious.
Real juicy. And maybe the Grand Weirwood conspiracy. That could be fun to go over that post. That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'll look. Yeah, I will dive into the Grand Weirwoods conspiracy as well as and then maybe you and I can map out sometime to do the Lost and Shield thing because it is. Yeah, it's interesting. But I do believe the whole thing is up on there. But
sweet.
Yeah, that's one of the things. And that's what I love. And we see these from time to time, too, is you get like one paragraph here that sends you down an entire different route than the chapter.
Yeah. It really does. And that's why rereading is so much fun, to be honest. I mean, it's just like there's always something new, dude. Like that shield thing has me reeling so bad.
Yeah. Okay.
I didn't know that.
Okay. Awesome. All right. Well, hey, guys, with that, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing A Storm of Swords, Chapter 45, Catelyn 5.
And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheknee.podcast.com.
We'll see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. If you're running a retail business, don't let disorganized order fulfillment cause chaos. Use ShipStation instead. From running a business out of your garage to multiple warehouses, ShipStation is ideal for every phase of your growth. Save time with one login for all your stores and by automating tasks, plus you'll get the best shipping rates from global carriers. Calm the chaos with the shipping software that delivers. Start a free trial at ShipStation.com/audio. That's ShipStation.com/audio.